Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Oh, such a clutch pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
He shoots. He scores.
Go to Blinds.com for up to 45% off and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Go right now for up to 45% off at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
The topic at hand, Mitchell Trubisky, who I think has the ability and the wherewithal to be a highly successful quarterback in the league. But as you know, you don't judge a fish on its ability to climb a tree. And in this situation, for far too long, Mitchell's skill set has been thrown to the wayside, and there's been an attempt to make him do things that maybe he feels uncomfortable doing. And I can tell you this, when the play breaks down and Mitchell doesn't have to think and he can just react, there's not a guy who I'd rather have the ball in his hand.
Former Bears offensive lineman Kyle Long on 670 The Score with Zach Zaidman and Mark Grote. It is Memorial Day 2020. That's what it is. Monday, May 25th is the day to which you are waking up, hopefully. And you are hearing the voices of Bruce Levine and me, Mark Grote. We are in for Dan Bernstein until noon today. Lots to come on the show still, including the one and only Les Grobstein, who will kick it with us at about 11:40. Right now, though, let's talk a whole bunch of Chicago Bears as we welcome into the program from the Chicago Tribune. He is Brad Biggs. How you doing, Brad?
I'm doing very well. How are you guys today?
We're hanging in there, man. We are obviously indoors right now. I'm looking forward to getting to the outside portion of life in about an hour from right now. But, Brad, we heard Kyle Long talking about the quarterback competition coming in right there. And I want to ask you, can we even call it a QB competition at this point? And might they have to kind of depend on a preconceived idea of who they think right now would be the starting quarterback, considering how little on-field time it appears they're going to get to compete for this job?
Well, I don't know that they've lost any real time for a competition here yet. They haven't started OTAs, which will be done virtually, it appears. And that would be the first time they're really missing, you know, an opportunity for work on the field. Is that gonna throw this whole thing off? I don't think so. To me, the idea that there's gonna be a big competition, a real competition, is something that starts in earnest in training camp. I think you could develop some ideas perhaps during OTAs in a vet mini camp, but you know, I don't think they have to call the thing off. I think it's Nick Foles' job to lose at this point. That's kind of my opinion, based on them going out and getting him and his relationship with the head coach Matt Nagy, the experience he's had with other assistants on the staff now. If they were comfortable with Mitch Trubisky, they don't go out and bring in a quarterback that they're going to guarantee $21 million to. So by virtue of that, I think he's kind of in the driver's seat, Foles that is, but we'll have to see what shakes out, and hopefully they could do something like open up training camp on time. We'll have to wait and see.
Brad, great to talk to you. Thanks for taking some time out today for me and Mark as well. And I'm wondering, you know, as we move toward a training camp and what that's going to look like, it's pretty much on record that Nagy has pretty much said that he will look at playing exhibition games, if we have them, differently this year with his regulars. What concepts do you think he learned from last year, and what do you think he has to use moving forward to prepare his team for a regular season?
Yeah, I honestly think the whole starters barely doing anything in preseason last year was totally overblown. That's my opinion. I think it didn't really have much of an effect on the season. I mean, let's look at the numbers. If you say, okay, what's sort of the average, or what did guys used to play in the preseason in terms of snaps? And I think if you go back to look at John Fox when he first came in as the head coach, John Fox, kind of an old school guy who believes in getting the players lathered up a little bit. In preseason, pretty consistent beliefs with a lot of the other coaches in the league, at least at the time. The starters on offense when Fox came in were getting like 65, 70 snaps total during preseason. And so if Nagy rolls those guys out there and they barely play at all, okay, what's the impact on their performance during the regular season? I have a hard time believing that, you know, 60, 65 snaps is really going to create a difference come week one of the regular season, week two of the regular season. Why are the Bears struggling in week seven? Because they didn't play in the preseason. I think that was something that people kind of wrapped their arms around. And honestly, I think it was an excuse that people were sort of clutching to, hoping that that was the explanation for why they sort of had a bumpy start last season. That's a much easier thing to accept if you're a Bears fan than, and maybe the talent's not quite what we thought it was. You know, what are you more comfortable doing? Blaming the coach for not playing the guys in the preseason? Or, yeah, maybe this offense just isn't that good, period. I don't know. But, yeah, he's going to play them this year, provided they have a normal preseason or a close to normal preseason, and that'll be part of the evaluation process. And the challenge for the coaching staff will be creating equal scenarios, sort of a level playing field where they're each getting the same amount of time with Allen Robinson, with the starting offensive lineman, with Jimmy Graham. You know, so they've got to sort of balance that out, and also hopefully have them in similar positions. You don't want one guy starting every possession inside his own 15-yard line while the other guy has got a couple possessions that he's starting at midfield. So it's going to be interesting to watch as it unfolds. But I personally just think the idea of preseason action having really anything to do with the regular season is way overstated.
Of Brad Biggs covers the Bears for the Chicago Tribune, along with Bruce Levine. I'm Mark Rohde here on The Score until noon today, at which time Lawrence Holmes will take over. Brad, we all know the Bears will be better if the offense gets closer in productivity to what the defense has done and likely will continue to do based on the talent that exists on the defensive side of the ball. Do you think the offense is better now based on what they have tweaked on the roster by additions in free agency and in the draft?
I think that is TBD. You know, are they going to be significantly better at the quarterback position? Are they going to be better on the offensive line? Can some of these other skill position players, other than Allen Robinson, elevate their game? And I think they've got a chance to be better at wide receiver. certainly they've got a chance to be better at quarterback. And you would believe that on the offensive line, some of those guys would bounce back and just simply go out and individually have a better season. And if a few of those things happen, if they're more consistent, absolutely they've got an opportunity to be better on offense, and they need to be. They need to be better across the board on offense this season. I think there's, cautious optimism is probably warranted here, because I think that offensive line is better than it showed last year. Is it great? Probably not, but it's got the capability of being better. And so if they get improvements at quarterback, that's going to make everything else a little bit better. It should. So we'll have to see. But, yeah, I think cautious optimism is how I would term it.
Brad, the perception of the Bears going into last season was the defense is so good that if you can just score 17 to 20 points a game, the defense is going to do the rest. Was that defense overrated, but or in your opinion, that's correct and they'll have the same perception going into this season? Or is there some quality of play that has to improve on defense as well for them to be back into a dominant status?
Yeah, the defense was very good last year. It wasn't quite as dominant as it was in 2018. But, you know, you nailed it. They couldn't score 17 points a game. So that the defense was put in a tough spot. I mean, that's hard, really hard for a defense to have to go out and know that it's got to carry the load week in and week out, especially when you're going up against a team that, either has a really good offense or a really good defense, where you know your offense is going to struggle to do a whole lot that week. I think they've got a chance to have a very good defense again. They're going to be a little bit different with hopefully some more pass rush ability. Robert Quinn should add an element of that, should take some pressure hopefully off Khalil Mack, who can have a better season. I don't know that they're going to be quite as good in coverage or against the run, but they've got some really good players to help in areas like that with Roquan and Danny Trevathan, and I like what they've done at safety. So, yeah, they should be really good on defense. They just need to be a little bit more balanced as an entire team to hopefully improve and go upward off that 8-8 mark.
Brad, I really like what you said about the offensive line, and I know how closely you in particular pay attention to that offensive line, and with the point being that it can be better than it was last year with the existing guys just having better years this year. There were a lot of penalties last year. My question to you about the offensive line, though, is it possible that the configuration changes again, as in James Daniels maybe goes back to center? And then what about the right guard position? Do you see Rashad Coward competing for that spot with Fetty, or is there going to be a change there?
Well, no, I don't think that there'll be change in Cody Whitehair and James Daniels again. They've got to pick one and stay with it, and they felt that they did better as a unit and that those guys maybe did a little bit better individually, at least Daniels after they made the switch halfway through last season and put James back at left guard and Cody at center. At right guard, Rashad Coward, I just don't think he played very well last year. So could he be in the mix? Yeah, the one sort of unknown we've got right now is you've got a new guy in charge of the line. So how is Juan Castillo going to evaluate these players? Juan Castillo is obviously going to have a ton of input in any moves or decisions they make with the offensive line. He hasn't worked with these guys yet. Just like we talked about the quarterback competition not getting going, he hasn't seen these guys other than over Zoom or whatever social media platform they're using to conduct their O-line meetings. So I think Coward could have a chance, but I think he's probably a long shot at this point to regain that starting job. I would have to think that without them even putting a uniform on, Fetty's probably the front runner for that position right now. But a lot can change once they put the pads on, hopefully during a normal or at least somewhat normal training camp.
Obviously, after 2018, the Bears were sure they had their guy in Ryan Pace. He signed through 2021. What do you think the perception is in Halas Hall right now about Pace going into this season? And is this a year that the Bears have to really shine and go to the playoffs for him to be looked at as the future man in charge of Bears operation?
Well, you know, that's a good question. I think a lot of it depends on how this season, you know, shakes out. If it's a really good season, it'll be the second time in 3 years that the Bears have gone out and played really good football. And, you know, that's when you start talking about moving towards something that they've lacked forever, which is consistency, which is sustained success. That's been very difficult for the Bears to achieve. If not, you know, what are the factors that went into the performance this coming season? I don't know. This is going to be an unusual football season for every team. I don't think there's any questioning that right now. So, you know, let's see how they perform. Let's see if they can get better performance at the quarterback position, no matter who's playing. You know, there's going to be some key questions that I think need to be answered, but the reality is George McCaskey's not going to make a decision on that now, and George might not even consider something at that position at the end of the season. They've been active again this offseason. You know, Pace has been very aggressive in the time he's been here. He's been decisive. Some of those moves have worked. Some have not worked as well, which is the story everywhere. You know, I get the question almost weekly, you know, when I do a mailbag for the Tribune is, what's the future of Ryan Pace after this season if they don't do well? And it's like, well, you know, I don't know. I mean, if I had a crystal ball right now, I'd try to figure out the pandemic. And then maybe after that, the football season. But we will, we'll have to see. At this time a year ago, though, I do know this. 12 months ago, boy, Ryan Pace probably could have gone in most restaurants in Chicago and not had to pay for a meal, right?
Absolutely. He was the executive of the year, Biggs. I mean, like he had a great year. I mean, it's just the nature of the NFL. It is so in every regard, the NFL is year to year in terms of winning and losing, and then subsequently the reactions that fans have. I do think, Brad, that at least rough draft to me is I think I like his draft this year at the top, Cole Kmet and Jalen Johnson. My question to you about both of those guys, because I've had differing opinions from people who really know the sport, are Cole Kmet and Jalen Johnson plug and play day one starters?
Well, yeah, I think Jalen Johnson is going to be the starter at corner. If he's not at the beginning of the season, he ought to be early in the season. And Cole Kmet, you're talking about a guy who I believe will play a lot this year. Is he a starter? I mean, that tight end thing's a little interesting. That probably will be overblown a little bit. To me, at the tight end and wide receiver position, it's almost more important to evaluate snaps and playing time than it is who was on the field to start the game. But, yeah, I could see Cole Kmet, if he has a really strong season and plays well, I could see him probably being involved on, you know, 50% of the snaps, something to that effect. It's just going to depend on how much they want to use that tight end position and how much they can throw at him as a rookie in that wide tight end position where he's going to be blocking, but they feel like he's got some upside as a receiver as well. Certainly displayed that during his time at Notre Dame. So, yeah, he's going to play, and I think Johnson starts.
Yeah, it's interesting with Kmet, as you just laid out, Brad, the fact that he's a big body. He's a prototypical body type for tight end, but he's more maybe wide receiver than tight end, or just someone to occupy the middle of the field, give a strong option and a guy that can break a tackle and maybe move a ball 25, 30 yards down the field, as opposed to the grind it out every play tight end.
Yeah, well, and they think he's got a lot of upside as a blocker. you know, that he certainly got the frame for that. He had to be able to develop, I think, in that regard. So they feel really good about him, and as they should, and I think they feel really good about Jalen Johnson. So I know this, they need a much bigger impact from the rookie class this year than they got a year ago. And right now, you'd have to feel optimistic about that happening. And I believe that you got to feel like there's a chance David Montgomery, their top pick from a year ago, can come back and have a better and more consistent and productive season as well.
Brad, appreciate your time. When's the next mailbag coming out, man?
Probably this Wednesday, a couple days.
Nice. Love the mailbag.
Always very thorough. How many questions are?
The questions are thorough, as are the answers. It seems like you have fun with that. Am I right with that?
Yeah, no, that's
like
a good time. I think the great thing about doing something like that is you get a real good picture of what the temperature's like for the fan base. Now, some people are always a little skewed and out there. In all directions, you know, positive, negative, that type of thing. But you get an idea for the temperature of the fan base, I think, when you do something like that.
Brad, thanks, man. I appreciate you coming out on the holiday, bro.
All right, have a great day, guys. Stay safe.
Yep. That is Brad Biggs, covers the Bears for the Chicago Tribune. Very simple to reach out to him on Twitter. Maybe if you have a question for Brad Biggs for his mailbag, you could do it on Twitter at Brad Biggs, common spelling, B-I-G-G-S. He's Bruce Levine. I'm Mark Rohde. When we come back, NFL still moving full speed ahead with their plans. I will outline that for you next. And coming up at 11:40, we'll talk to Les Grobstein. It's Mark Rohde and Bruce Levine with you until noon in for Dan Bernstein on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify is got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
Our normal is if you have 100,000 people in an Alabama football game, or 110,000 to be exact, we want 110,000 people there. We want every seat occupied. Normal is not going to be where you have a game with 50,000 people.
President Donald Trump, along with Bruce Levine, I'm Mark Rohde here on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. We are with you until noon. Happy Memorial Day. Thanks for being with us. The Grobber, Les Grobstein, will join us in 15 minutes for a little bit of fun. And you heard Trump right there, and it would appear that the Prez is simpatico with Troy Vincent. Check out this headline. Troy Vincent, NFL planning for full stadiums until medical community tells us otherwise. So the NFL has no plans right now on playing football games in empty stadiums in 2020, unless, of course, it is forced to do so. Now, Troy Vincent, for people who don't know, is the league's executive vice president of football operations. He said on the Brian Mitchell show, the former Redskins player, and he now works for the Team 980 in Washington, D.C., that the league is planning for full stadium when the season begins. He says, quote, "We are planning to have full stadiums until the medical community tells us otherwise." This is what Vincent said on Friday. And then he goes on to say, now remember, when we're talking about August, September. So there's lots that can happen here. So we're planning for full stadiums. We also know that we have to have a plan for half stadiums, three quarters. So we're planning for all of these different scenarios. But first and foremost, we're making every effort working with the medical community if we have those stadiums to be able to use at a full capacity. And Bruce, what the NFL has had on their side since this pandemic started, or since we started taking COVID-19 seriously, is time. As in their sport, the NFL does not begin in earnest until the second week of September. That's when NFL games are supposed to be played. But I don't think there's a chance of a single soul making it through the turnstiles of any NFL stadium this year. I like the attitude, but I don't see it happening based on everything that has already happened.
Well, we have some time, Mark, and that's the good thing. The reality is it's going to be up to states, governors, and mayors of cities to help you determine whether or not you're going to have 60 to 100,000 people in a football stadium. I think it's unrealistic to think that the college season will have their stands full with collegiate fans and fans of the game, only because we don't even know what the college year is going to look out for people who are going to college, or whether they're going to ever be in dormitories or on campus. So from that perspective, the NFL has it wide open to them to kind of back things up. And from what the investigating I've been doing on it, Mark, is that there's a likelihood that the NFL will back up their season. I mean, you have the bye week, and then you have the week in between the Super Bowl, between the playoffs and the Super Bowl. So you can easily push forward and say we're starting the NFL season 2 weeks later, and that will give you optimum time. And the main goal, even if fans aren't in stadiums during the regular season, at least at the beginning or for a few months, the main goal would be to have a Super Bowl with a full stadium sometime at the end of February, or even, if you can imagine, the beginning of March, which has been projected as a possible time for a Super Bowl, depending on how far the NFL wants to back up their season. So all these things are being discussed, and it's interesting that is the plan so far as looking at the NFL and trying to figure out fans in the stands and the ultimate goal of getting a whole season in.
Yeah, kind of. Like, I don't know if this makes sense, but I kind of like their ignorance. Just the fact that they're just like, yep, until somebody says something to us, we're planning on having 70,000 people in the stadiums every single Sunday. I know the Pittsburgh Steelers are taking precaution towards playing in stadiums at limited capacity, as the Steelers actually announcing, for example, that only 50% of individual 2020 game tickets will be sold to the public. The Miami Dolphins have also taken measures towards making game day changes that incorporate social distancing. So Hard Rock Stadium could be down to 15,000 fans for the 2020 season if the pandemic continues. And it's not even a matter of continuing, and hopefully we're on the downside of deaths, but really it comes down to that one little thing, Bruce, and it's the vaccine. I just don't see how you can put, even if you're socially distancing, 15,000 people in one building, albeit large, just doesn't sound doable to me unless there's a vaccine.
Well, Can you imagine if you've had four tickets on the 50-yard line, 20 rows up for the Bears over the last 30 years, and they tell you, you know what, you're not sitting with the people you sit with. As a matter of fact, we're going to allot you just two of those tickets, and you're going to have to be separated from the people you go with. So it creates a tremendous amount of stress and strain on the ticket situation and people even being allowed in stadiums. So I'm with you, but I'm going with the idea that the NFL has time here, and they feel that time is on their side as far as finding some medical issues that work for sports outside. You know, sports inside in a stadium, you know, like, you know, the United Center, I'm not seeing that happening until 2021 at the earliest. I don't think that's going to happen. But sports on the outside in an open facility with proper distancing, maybe that can happen by October or November. Maybe, as they say, the season will be backed up a month, and you'll see the Super Bowl on March 1st of 2021.
I'd absolutely love it. And I'll say this, too. I mean, we talked with Biggs a little bit about this, but it is going to change the way teams are put together, what coaches trust. Playbooks are probably going to change a little bit, and I do think that the quarterback competition is going to be heavily affected, and that they better have some idea of who they're thinking now, even if they weren't able to hit the practice field. Let's hear a little bit. We heard a little bit from Kyle Long coming into the Brad Biggs segment about the quarterback spot. Here's an extended version of what Kyle Long thinks about the Bears' quarterback competition between Mitchell Trubisky and Nick Foles.
Well, clearly there's a lot to talk about here, and it's a point of discussion that Chicagoans will never drop the quarterback situation, regardless of century, decade, or roster. But now we've got a guy named Mitchell Trubisky. I changed his name back last week. It's official. And Nick Foles coming in. They're going to compete. What I read this morning was that Nick Foles was coming in to win the starting job. That's what he said. He said, I'm willing to help Mitch Trubisky, but, you know, as an athlete, if I'm coming in as a right guard and I'm going to compete, I'm going to say the same thing. And I know that's not a sentiment that's echoed across the league when new guys come to teams. They say, I'm here to, you know, I'm here to help out the team, and they say all the pat answers. I respect that about Nick Foles. I'm coming in to win the job. Now, the topic at hand, Mitchell Trubisky, who I think has the ability and the wherewithal to be a highly successful quarterback in the league. But as you know, you don't judge a fish on its ability to climb a tree. And in this situation, for far too long, Mitchell's skill set has been thrown to the wayside, and there's been an attempt to make him do things that maybe he feels uncomfortable doing. And I can tell you this, when the play breaks down and Mitchell doesn't have to think and he can just react, there's not a guy who I'd rather have the ball in his hand. I've seen plays break down. I've also seen plays go as planned when we have the schematic set to play to our skill set.
All right, again, that was Kyle Long with Zach Zaman and yours truly, me, Mark Grody. And I do think it was interesting that you heard, and obviously he's going to be a little bit biased towards Mitchell Trubisky, but Kyle Long, Bruce, was pretty pointed in discussing the need for a run game and the heavy indication being put Mitchell Trubisky in a position in which to succeed, which means allowing him to improvise and to be himself a little bit more. And, and it's the first guy I've heard in a while, Bruce, that it seems to have a little bit of optimism that this can still be Mitchell Trubisky's job when they hopefully start the season in the second week of September.
Yeah, I mean, he presented, Mark, and correct me if I'm wrong, a scenario where if you make it perfect for Mitchell Trubisky, he's going to be a good quarterback. Well, I don't think that's realistic, do you? I mean, when are there perfect situations? I do agree that you let him freelance a little bit more and come out of that pocket and be himself. But as far as creating a dummy-proof situation, for lack of a better term, You're not going to have that in the NFL all the time. You're going to have to be able to go to your secondary and third receiver You're going to have to be able to get creative with your back coming out of the out of the backfield when plays break down. So there's still work to be done on both sides, I think.
Bruce, you know who we should pose this question to? I think we should pose this question to Les Grobstein.
That's a great idea.
I think that he would probably have the definitive answer. Let's have a little fun with Les Grobstein next. It's Mark Grody and Bruce Levine, Grobber, on the other side on Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score.
What do you think about all this impeachment stuff? No, I'm just kidding.
We don't talk politics on this show, ever.
Okay.
Ever.
All right.
The unmistakable theme song for the one and only Les Grobstein, the host of Score Overnight, midnight to 5, every single morning on Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score. The Grobber joins us right now. Grobber, how many years you been Score Overnighting it?
Grand total, we're getting on 15 years.
Two
periods kind of put together, so it'll be about 15 years total.
I got to imagine that there will be, once the 15th year hits in earnest, I got to believe, knowing you and the fact that you know how to rise to an occasion, there will be an overnight Grobber party like we have never seen before once that 15th anniversary hits, yeah?
Let's get that far, then we'll worry about it. But the most important thing is let's keep everybody healthy. Let's keep everybody safe. I hope everybody's had a wonderful Memorial Day weekend. I know what we have had, and we'll complete it tonight. We're planning to have an awesome dinner together. And then midnight, we're back on the air tonight.
Les, when you look at the situation going on with sports trying to return, what you think it's more economic or the actual health situation that is going to drive these sports back into the main arena and starting to play again?
Bruce, you hit them both. Bruce, you hit them both right on the nail. It is economics. It's all about money. You know that as well as I do. You've been covering this as long as me. They have to make money. They want to make money or it's not going to happen. Now, as far as keeping everybody safe to get the games going again, yeah, they want to do that too. They want to try to figure out a way to do both. But if they aren't making money, and we know that if the stands are going to be empty or mostly empty, they're going to make money putting the games on TV. We know that's going to happen. The TV revenue, whether you're talking about the NFL or Major League Baseball or the other sports, and we know that they're working on trying to get some games going again in the NBA and the NHL. And actually, the Bulls and Blackhawks may both be done, or they both may not be done. They both still may be playing. So as far as the economics, I think there is no doubt the owners, they want to make money. The players, as we've seen with baseball, they're not going to agree with giving up a lot of revenue either.
What do you think about that? I mean, you mentioned the Blackhawks might not be done, Grobber. I mean, there's a scenario where they play a best-of-five series against the Edmonton Oilers as a sort of a play-in to the playoffs. I mean, and it is viable. Like, I think we're going to see that. Do they even deserve that chance, Les?
They screwed up royally down the stretch before play was stopped in early March. March 11th. That's my birthday, by the way. Wonderful happy birthday to me as they stopped playing everything at that point. But the bottom line is if the Hawks are able to get a series with Edmonton, that'd be kind of good because they still have Kane, they have Taze, they have Keith, they got Seabrook, maybe Seabrook. We don't know if he's going to be ready to come back and play or not. But they'll have Kirby Dach. They'll have some good players. And while Edmonton is a very good team, they're very fast, and that's been one of the Hawks' problems the last couple of years. They used to be one of the fastest teams in the NHL. Now, with the exception of a few players, they're one of the slowest teams. Now, as far as what's going on with the Bulls, they clearly don't deserve to play, but they may. They may have everybody finish the regular season, so they may get to play some games. But if they're all being played down in Orlando, where all the Eastern teams are supposedly going to play, is it going to really be that big of a deal? And are they deserving of being in a postseason situation? No, they're not. They've been, I don't think they've been intentionally tanking. And the question is, will Bolin still be the head coach? And it looks like he will be. And we knew all as well that the head coach of the situation, it would also be somebody that we know that the management up on the upper top situation, they want to have things, they want to bring back Bolin, at least give him a chance. I'm opposed to that totally. Bolin is a guy that if they bring him back and he is rehired for next season, can you imagine how the fans are going to react to that? Oh, my gosh.
Hey, that's one of the most accomplished sports executives in Chicago history and a good friend of ours. John McDonough was fired recently. Obviously, the story was just that. We were told he was fired. Couldn't be any follow-up because there's nobody to follow up with at this point in time. But from your perspective, just give me your thoughts about John McDonough's place in Chicago sports history and whether or not you will see him rise from the ashes sometime soon and stay viable.
Bruce, he's going to get scooped up by somebody. You got to remember that the Blackhawks went 49 years without winning a Stanley Cup. He came here, changed things around. Now, people have to remember, too, he did a great job with the Chicago Sting, and they won a couple championships when he was there. The Cubs picked him up, and we saw how they became one of the most fantastic organizations there. I have been told, and you might have been told the same thing, there were people within the organization of the Cubs that felt he really didn't do that great of a job. They're trying to take credit and stuff. You know what? I don't know about that. The bottom line is John McDonough did a tremendous job. The Cubs turned into a great organization, and we had no idea what was going to end up happening there. But attendance has gone way up. Right now they're selling out every game, and we know that since Ricketts took over, it's a new organization. Anybody that hasn't been to Wrigley Field for about 6 or 7 years, they would not even recognize Wrigleyville where it is right now. John McDonough did a tremendous job, and I think that there was obviously a difference of opinion the way certain things were going to be coming and what was going to end up coming with the Blackhawks. Stan Bowman is now running the whole situation, and we think that there may have been a difference of opinion of how to run the team.
Hey, Les, I got a text here says that there should be a 10-part documentary about the Grobber. That is the belief that exists. Now, I don't know if there's going to be a documentary, but I do know that you have now for a long time in conversations that I've had with you on the air and off the air that you have talked about a book that might come out. And I want to know if there is a Les Grobstein book, which chapter would be longer? The one on Beavis Bettman or the one on Green Bay Packers fans? Discuss.
Neither one. The two that would probably be the longest would be April 29th of 1983 when we had the Lee Elia tirade. And also happened the week of the Super Bowl, Super Bowl 20, the Thursday of Super Bowl week when the rumor came out, the false rumor, somebody down in New Orleans, a guy by the name of the late now Buddy DiLiberto, claimed that there was an interview done on the Fred Winston show from New Orleans with Fred and with myself, and that the women of New Orleans were called by Jim McMahon a bunch of, I can't say on the air what he supposedly called them, and it's a lie because he didn't do that. And Catherine Johns, who was back here in Chicago, she called us on a landline and said, what's the story about McMahon? And I talked to her off the air. I said, this is a ruse. It's a lie. It never happened. She goes, okay. Then she calls me back 10 minutes later. She says, we got some more calls, and it's all over the place. So we had an engineer and a line set up at the Hilton Hotel where the Bears were staying. And we were the only station, the first station was going to carry the coaches news conference. So we were going to carry Mike Ditka. And we get there before anybody else. And who's the first person that comes to me is Mark Giangreco. He says, what about this McMahon story? I said, Mark, it's a lie. It never happened. He says, well, I have to interview you. I go, you what? He says, just answer the question. They turned on the camera. And I said, this is a bunch of baloney. In fact, I said something that you can't say on the air. I said, you go ahead and bleep it out, but this is a bunch of BS. And wow. When he was done, Jim Rose comes up to me, says, I got to talk to you next. And, you know, again, Giangreco at that time was working at Channel 5. Jim Rose was working, as he still is today, at Channel 7. I got done with him. Johnny Morris comes up to me. He says, Jeannie, which was his then wife, says she needs to talk to you next. And by the time I'm done, there were a couple hundred people around us. And then later on, that multiplied by almost triple. And it was absolutely ridiculous. And Ditka shows up, and he was stunned to see how many people around me. And then eventually, Mr. Zucker, the late Mr. Zucker, the general manager of Jim McMahon, he convinced McMahon to come down and deny everything. First, McMahon was not going to do it. He says, to hell with these people. I've been nice all week. Why should I come down and be nice to them all of a sudden? Well, he comes down, sees by that time, there. He claimed he saw about 300 people around me. I don't know if it was that big, but that's what he said he saw. And he said that he saw those people and felt that the Super Bowl week had disintegrated into the Twilight Zone. There was more about it, too. I'm not going to go into it all now, but I think that's going to be gigantic, and I think the Lee Elia thing. The other things you talked about, they'll be big, but the other stuff will be minuscule compared to what we just talked about.
Les, you got a minute and 30 seconds to tell us how your brush with famous people began for your bar mitzvah and how your dad got famous football players and baseball players to come to your bar mitzvah.
What? They convinced Johnny Morris and Bob Kilcullen of the 63 championship Bears to show up there. I had known Johnny before then anyway, and keep in mind, I was only 13 years old, but they were there. I still have a picture of myself with both of these guys, and it hasn't been put on my website yet, but it'll be on grobber.com eventually, and both of those guys were there that night, and it was tremendous.
Was there an exchange of funds? Was there any monetary remuneration involved?
I don't know that. They didn't tell me. It was none of my business, and I was 13 years old, so I was just about to become a teenager, so they weren't going to tell me. Neither of my parents are still alive, so any chance of finding out, the only person that could possibly tell me is Johnny himself, and I don't think he's going to tell me, and it's none of my business.
Don't ask,
Les,
don't tell.
We appreciate it. Hey, thanks so much for taking some time with Mark and I today. You know, we always enjoy listening to you overnight. Nobody does it better than you for so many years. Great friend and a great entertainer. Thanks so much, Les, for taking some time out today.
Bruce, we go way back. We've been buddies a long time. Mark and I have also, he comes on my show a lot and vice versa. And Bruce, what you're doing on the weekend, especially now with what's happening or what isn't happening with baseball, that's a fantastic show you guys have going on.
Thanks. Appreciate
you're the goods, Grabber. How's the bird? The bird okay?
Bird is two rooms over and she's tweeting away.
Okay. At least somebody in the Grobber household tweets. I mean, Lord knows you don't have Twitter.
Well, when I have dinner with Kathy a little bit later on, we're going to have an awesome dinner tonight.
Good. Say hi all to right. Kathy for us, all right?
I will say hi absolutely. For both of you.
All right. Bye, Les.
Be good.
Love that, man. Perfect, are we done perfect, here?
Yeah, perfect ending to 3 hours of fun here, Mark. I really enjoyed it. We have people to thank.
Yeah, we do, for sure. We want to thank Casey Johnson, Brad Biggs, Jay Zawoski, that guy you just heard, Les Grobstein. Sean Anderson was the executive producer and associate producer of the show today. Bruce, I had a blast working with you like I always do, and I hope you have a great rest of your holiday Monday, brother.
Yeah, I'll be listening to Lawrence on the way out. Have a great weekend.
Yep, Lawrence Holmes is next on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Dump them.
Spring is a time of renewal, so why not refresh your home with a little help from Blinds.com? We make getting custom window treatments a minor project with major impact. Choose from premium blinds, shades, and shutters. We even have options for your patio, too. Blinds.com invented a better way to shop for custom window treatments. There's no pushy salespeople in your home or inflated showroom prices. Our design experts can help you find the perfect window treatments on your schedule. We'll even send free samples directly to you. Plus, we can handle the measuring and installation for you. Unlimited window treatments installed for just one low cost. And with Blinds.com, you'll always get transparent pricing. No hidden fees. Our free shipping and 100% satisfaction guarantee can put the spring back into your step. And into your home, too. Shop Blinds.com right now and save up to 45%. Up to 45% off for a limited time at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.